Nobody can be too Jewish.
That's exactly it. You got it.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is the executive director of the Zamir Choral Foundation, conductor, arranger, recording artist, and co-winner of the Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for 2021, Matthew Lazar. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on 2 Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. 2 Jewish is paid for by 2 Jewish Radio programs and podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2 Jewish.
Shalom. Music has always been integrally important to Judaism. Jewish prayer traditionally has always been sung rather than read, and that includes our most sacred text, the Torah, always chanted publicly, as it has been for perhaps 2,500 years. In the days of the Temple in Jerusalem, now almost 2,000 years gone, large and small choirs of Levitical priests sang at every service, accompanied by orchestras playing wind, brass, string, and percussion instruments. In the synagogues that followed over the next 2,000 years, instrumental music was excluded from most services, but elaborate forms of vocal music flourished in many different cultures all around the world. These included great cantors and wonderful male choirs of all ages in Eastern and Central Europe, while in the Mediterranean region and the Middle East, full congregational singing, everybody singing, was near universal. In Italy, complex polyphonic Renaissance-style choirs developed in the 1500s and 1600s, while in the 19th century in Germany and Western Europe, in South Africa and America, mixed choirs and organs produced a new kind of westernized Jewish music. In the first half of the 20th century, magnificent cantors became musical and recording stars, often accompanied by choirs and instruments during sold-out performances. And over the last 50 years, an incredible variety of musical approaches have been adopted by Jews, from guitar-based folk music to Jewish jazz and rock, to elaborate new forms of vocal and instrumental innovations in services. Of course, Jewish music wasn't restricted to the synagogue at any time, and we have had an inordinate number of amazing Jewish singers, musicians, composers, arrangers, conductors, and performers everywhere in the musical world and in every era. In classical music, certain instruments even, the violin, the clarinet, sometimes the piano, were sometimes considered Jewish instruments because there were so many outstanding artists, while great Jewish opera stars became beloved performers around the world. Jewish folk music, too, created entire genres of popular music, like klezmer or Yiddish song, while completely different and equally beautiful folk music flourished among Sephardic and Middle Eastern Jews. And of course, Jews have been incredibly prominent on the American music scene at every level, from basically inventing Broadway musicals to jazz to the many great rock and roll artists who are Jewish. And in Israel, a vital and extensive industry produces music of every style today, adopting the latest trends into new forms of Jewish music. One area of Jewish musical life, however, can be said to have impacted more of us than perhaps any other: singing in Jewish choirs. Jewish youth choirs, teen choirs, adult choirs, as well as High Holy Day choirs, form an important part of every synagogue of any size and of many Jewish day schools and community centers. Most real cantors are also choir directors and conductors on the side, and many Jewish musicians got their start singing in these groups. There is a joy to singing in a choir that adds musical beauty and variety, and of course energy and participation to Shabbat, Holy Day, and Jewish event celebrations. And choirs can create a musical language, a congregational repertoire that enables a shared experience of music that spans an entire Jewish community, or even almost all the Jews in a whole nation. A personal note, no pun intended, about Jewish music. From the time I was 13 years old, just after my bar mitzvah, I sang in choirs, madrigal groups, glee clubs, and choruses throughout high school and college, as well as Shabbat and High Holy Day choirs at the synagogue where my dad was the cantor. As a young cantor myself, I conducted my first Jewish choirs at the age of 22, beginning with a High Holy Day volunteer choir, then a professional High Holy Day choir, and soon I'd created youth and teen choirs. When I had my own congregation as a cantor, I started adult, teen, and youth choirs with a mix of instrumentalists, and by the time I left the full-time cantorate to go to rabbinical school, I had over 100 singers in my various choirs in a congregation of just 500 families. When I became a rabbi, I continued to create and conduct choirs, adult, teen, and youth choirs, plus High Holy Day choirs, organized a Jewish rock band, commissioned Jewish music, and I've been involved in directing and conducting concert-level choirs and other musical groups for the better part of 40 years now, even when it wasn't my principal job. Jewish music is certainly integral to my Jewish identity. Some of my former students in my youth and teen choirs are now cantors and cantorial soloists, while many others have continued to sing and play in volunteer or professional Jewish musical groups. There can be no stronger connection to Jewish life, I don't think, than a musical one, in which the melodies and sounds we love are an important part of our love of Judaism. So it is with particular joy that I welcome to Too Jewish today a guest who's done more than perhaps any individual in this generation to further the growth, development, and excellence of diverse Jewish choral music around the world, especially in America and Israel. Because somehow when we sing to God a new song, as the psalm puts it, or even an old one in a new arrangement, we are both connecting to our amazing Jewish heritage and enlivening and refreshing this tradition in vital and beautiful ways. That is an incredible gift. It also helps explain why we've chosen to award one of the Samuel S. and A. Irma Kohan Memorial Foundation Awards this year for service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people, to Matthew Mati Lazar, our guest here on Too Jewish Today. And so to play us in this very musical morning from Hazamir, the International Teen Choir of the Zamir Choral Foundation, our guest Mati Lazar's organization, which is made up of young Jewish singers from all across America and Israel, well, they're here performing, at least virtually, When You Believe by past two Jewish guests, Stephen Schwartz and Hans Zimmer. This song, celebrating the Exodus, was recorded last year, and it is quite wonderful. That was When You Believe, performed by Hazamir, the International Teen Choir of the Zamir Choral Foundation, headed by our guest this morning, Matthew Mati Lazar. As I mentioned, Mati's a winner of the 2021 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award, which will be presented to him right here in Tucson, Arizona, Friday night, March 4th, 2022, at Congregation Beit Simcha. Mati Lazar is an outstanding conductor, arranger, and recording artist, a winner of the 2021 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for his tremendous contributions to Jewish music around the world through the Zamir Choral Foundation. Meet him and find out just how fantastic Jewish choral music is when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
We welcome our guest this morning with a piece he conducted with one of his many outstanding Jewish choral groups, Zemer Noded. It's called Hallelujah, Praise God. Delighted to welcome the Too Jewish our guest this morning. Mati Matthew Lazar has been an extraordinary force for Jewish music and particularly Jewish choral music throughout his career. He is the founder of the Zamir Choral Foundation, conductor, recording artist, composer, arranger, and one of the winners of the Kohan Memorial Foundation 2021 Awards. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
So how does somebody become a pioneer in Jewish choral music?
Well, one first of all has to love Jewish choral music and notice that there's no one else around doing it and jump in like Nachshon ben Aminadav in the Red Sea.
Parting the waters before you. You know, when you started in doing this, I'll take it back to the beginning. There's a lot of us that love Jewish choral music, but we're, you know, fortunate if we can put together a choir in our own congregation or in our own community. How did you start, and then how did it kind of take off?
Well, I came from a very unusual and extraordinary family who loved being Jewish, very cultural musically. And so I grew up with listening to Moshe Kozovitsky and his all-male choir. Having my parents sing and play Schubert Lieder and Gilbert and Sullivan. And when I was in high school, I sang in what was then the Masad Choral Group, which was an outgrowth of the Masad Summer Camp movement, which ended up for legal reasons changing its name to the Zamir Chorale. And so I started singing and was the assistant conductor way back. And when I took over the choir, I ended up changing the nature of the choir to the foundation, which is really is right now the Zamir Choral Foundation, with projects that include Hazamir, the International Jewish Teen Choir, so other Jewish teenagers could have the experience of singing first-rate Jewish music. I'm repeating that phrase again, first-rate Jewish music.
Right.
And the North American Jewish Choral Festival, which brings together Jews and non-Jews who love Jewish choral music every summer. And I think that's pretty much the short thumbnail version.
It's a good thumbnail. How many countries have you performed in, have your groups performed in, and from how many countries do you think do the people come from who are involved in the Zamir Chorale, who are involved in the various other ensembles that you put together and in the festivals?
Well, the Zamir Chorale is a local New York City and environs choir for adults. Zamir Noded, which I didn't mention, is a young adult choir, and that's also the same metropolitan New York area. HaZamir has 40 chapters in 32 cities in the U.S. and 8 cities in Israel. And at the North American Jewish Choral Festival, during the summers, we have people from Canada, from Israel, from South America, and a few from Europe as well.
We will talk much more with Mati Lazar about the Zamir Choral Foundation, about Jewish choral music in general, and about winning the 2021 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills and northwest Tucson, is celebrating a wonderful array of services, classes, and events this winter and spring. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has already created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A newish, progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services Friday night and Saturday morning, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us for in-person Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live by going to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome both members and guests into our sanctuary safely but in person. Call 520-276-5675 for more information. Beit Simcha Synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road on the north side of Ina, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall property in our own building. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Join us in person Friday night or Saturday morning, or both, by emailing me, rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or you can come every Friday night to our Facebook page for Shabbat evening celebration services at 6:30 p.m. with full music. Saturday Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m., all with me leading them. Torah study precedes them at 9 a.m., but that's on Zoom. And in person, of course. Our Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson. Our services with Oneg Shabbat and Kiddush afterwards are in person, but of course also by virtual experience. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are live and on Zoom. You can access those through the website, Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Our wonderful religious school is available for all ages in blended formats, some students live, some on Zoom. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha to attend services, our wonderful religious school and Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation and high school programs, and rich array of adult education academy courses taught in person and on Zoom, and of course all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675, BeitSimchaTucson.org. And don't forget, we've got Shabbat afternoon hikes and our fantastic rodeo Shabbat ride coming up, the only horseback service available in, well, the world. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the newest Jewish community and the fastest growing congregation in all of southern Arizona in its exciting beginning years, BeitSimchaTucson.org. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O JewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, 2JewishRadio.com. Streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store is very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in North America, according to Moment Magazine. Over 175,000 downloads on Podbean. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome back a randomly occurring feature of Two Jewish, our Zen Judaism. Koans, or koans of Zen wisdom. Zen is not easy. It takes effort to attain nothingness. And what do you have then? Bubkis. And breathe in. Breathe out. Breathe in. Breathe out. Forget this, and attaining enlightenment will be the least of your problems. That was Zen Judaism, koans of wisdom on Two Jewish. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
There's been a story in the news. It's actually been an ongoing battle for a long time between the Touro Synagogue, the congregation that currently occupies the oldest, most quite beautiful historic congregation in Newport, Rhode Island. Actually participated in a service there some years back. And Sherith Israel, an important Sephardic congregation, similarly historic in New York, over who gets to control the premises, which have been occupied by a conservative congregation for 140 years. But the building, of course, goes back far beyond that, which brings up the question of sort of where does the American Jewish community come from, which I think a lot of American Jews are not too clear on.
Well, I think that's a very interesting question on a number of levels. I have to confess that I know absolutely nothing about this specific legal dispute.
You're not here as a lawyer. It's okay.
To which you referred. But let's first clarify for your listeners that when you talk about Sephardic synagogues and Sephardim in North America, what you're talking about is the Spanish-Portuguese community of people who originated in the Iberian Peninsula. And only much later, really with the birth of the State of Israel, did people start to confuse Sephardic Jews as a term, as a category, with Edot HaMizrach, Jews of the East or of the Orient, like Iraqis, Yemenites, Egyptians, Moroccans. There's all these other groups who, first of all, in many cases are visually different, but they also significantly came from Muslim countries, as opposed to the Jews of the Iberian Peninsula who came from Catholic countries. And those were the Jews who were the first Jews in the New World, in Brazil, all over the Caribbean. They were heavily involved in the chocolate trade. There were supposedly Jews who arrived with Christopher Columbus on those original three ships.
Yeah, supposedly his navigator, Diaz, was a converso, of, or at least a secret Jew in some way or another.
Right. So we should once again make the distinction. I mean, for many American Jews, the Jewish world is binary. You're either Sephardic or Ashkenazic. But the truth is, it's more complicated than that. And that's like a sloppy intellectual shortcut, because there's all kinds of other communities that don't neatly fall into either category, like the Yemenites, or even in Europe, the Italian Jews
right.
are really neither Ashkenazic nor Sephardic.
Right.
So
Nesach Roma, it's a totally different thing.
So that's an important clarification to make. The other, I think, clarification to make is that prior to the American Revolution, most Jews in the Americas writ large, North, South, and the Caribbean world, were originally from Spain and Portugal. And they...
Amsterdam and, from Portugal to Amsterdam and then to the New World.
Yeah. Most of them didn't come directly. Some
right.
did.
But, right.
You know, where did Jews from the Iberian Peninsula flee? Initially, they fled to Protestant countries in Europe, specifically the Netherlands and what became the United Kingdom, what was then probably England. So even ultimately Jews with very Anglo-sounding names often were Sephardic Jews living in England who jumped on the possibilities offered by this burgeoning new economy in the New World. And then we should look maybe at subsequent waves of immigration in our next session.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely the first wave, though, the first synagogues established, most of the first Jewish institutions were founded by Sephardic Jews.
Right.
Thanks so much, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. I'm telling you, today I already burned 2,000 calories. I will never leave Hamantaschen in the oven while taking a nap again. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish. Just for you, you should live and be well. By the way, that joke came to us from a remarkable Talmud teacher, Rabbi Yossi Reber. Many thanks, Yossi. And don't burn the Hamantaschen. And now a word of Torah. Hope is a tangible, unstated presence in our Torah portion this week, Vayakhel, the penultimate sedra in the book of Exodus. On the surface, this parsha is nothing more than a listing of how the tabernacle in the wilderness was constructed by our ancestors, lists of materials used, processes employed, structures and implements assembled. Many pieces of wood, gold, skins of animals used to make that item. These artisans employed on that project. Moses asked for these specific materials, and they were graciously donated, and so on. But in another sense, this is an incredibly hopeful Torah portion, a section that truly represents the triumph of hope over experience. In last week's portion of Ki Tisa, the people of Israel dramatically failed both God and Moses. They made a golden calf and worshipped it, bowed down before it, and insisted it was their God. Just 40 days after receiving the Ten Commandments at Sinai, they forgot that revelation and abandoned monotheism, morality, everything they had just been taught. It was a devastating moment for Moses. It must have been an incredibly depressing event for God, too. And yet, just a few passages later, we find God instructing Moses to build a tabernacle, a permanent home for the Shekhinah, the divine presence, right in the midst of this same rotten people. Those people, the Israelites, our ancestors, have proven they are not worthy, and yet God immediately gives them a place, no, insists that they create a place that will be a constant and permanent reminder. God will always be with them and never abandon them. It almost seems like a reward for treachery. Actually, though, it's a promise of hope. For a God will dwell among them. Asuli mikdash v'shachanti betocham, we were told in the earlier portion of Truma. Build me a sanctuary and I, God, will dwell among you. Well, that's a pledge that things can always be made good that losses can be recovered, that we are always able to come into grace and blessing. That juxtapositioning has incredible resonance. If our ancestors could go almost immediately from the betrayal of the golden calf to the blessing of a brand spanking new tabernacle, well, perhaps we can similarly rise from any communal failures to ultimate success. For the tabernacle is the model for every temple in Jewish history, a promise and a pledge of hope. You probably know the Hebrew word for hope, tikvah, from the national anthem of Israel, ha-tikvah. But for me, tikvah is a kind of promise from God that even after our worst moments, even in our depths of despair or failure, we can return to God, to holiness, and to goodness. God will forgive us and be present for us and be among us. So may it always be. When we come back, our guest, Matthew Mati Lazar, the founder and director of the Zamir Choral Foundation, the HaZamir International Jewish Teen Choir, Zamir HaNoded Choral Group, and other groups, recording artist, conductor, and arranger, winner of the 2021 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for Service to Klal Yisrael, the whole Jewish people for his work in the area of creative arts, Mati Lazar will join us to continue to discuss Jewish music, tell great stories, and much more. All when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
In a visit that was remarkable in large part because it seemed unremarkable, Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett became the very first Israeli head of government to make an official visit to Bahrain. Bennett's visit extends the practical aspects of the Abraham Accords and further strengthens the new reality of the Israeli Gulf Arab State Alliance against the Iranians into economic and entrepreneurial areas. Naftali Bennett met Bahrain's king on his landmark visit to the oil-rich Gulf country, just 17 months after they established relations under the 2020 U.S.-sponsored deal, based in part on shared concerns about Iran, of course. He was greeted by Crown Prince Salman bin Hamad Al Khalifa, who also serves as the kingdom's prime minister, and a military color guard at Manama's Gudabia Palace. He told the Crown Prince that he came with a spirit of goodwill, of cooperation, of standing together against mutual challenges. Prime Minister Bennett also met several government ministers and discussed the need for greater economic cooperation between Bahrain and Israel. We want to fill this relationship with substance in energy, in drive, in economy, in tourism, and in the regional architecture, he said. The one-day visit last week to the island kingdom was the first by any Israeli leader in history. Early this month, Israel and Bahrain signed a defense pact. Last week, Bahrain announced that an Israeli naval officer would be stationed in Manama, which is also home to the U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet. The Israeli military, the IDF, confirmed it will have a naval representative attached to the U.S. Fifth Fleet. You know, it took 30 years for the first Arab nation to make a peace treaty with Israel, Egypt, and that has always been a cold peace. It took another 15 years before Jordan signed treaties with Israel, and that has been, at best, a lukewarm relationship. But there is something quite different about the way the Gulf states, the UAE and Bahrain, have embraced their new relationship with Israel, all in, well, less than 2 years. And it seems likely that the other Muslim states that have opened relations with Israel, Morocco and Sudan, are also eager to gain the benefits of positive relationships with the Jewish state. In other news from Israel, Prime Minister Bennett is backing lifting coronavirus restrictions put in place to counter the Omicron variant by March 1st. That may include allowing unvaccinated tourists into the country. We will see. Last week, the Israeli Health Ministry presented a plan to Bennett to gradually lift coronavirus restrictions. The plan calls for canceling COVID tests before a flight on its way to Israel, but keeping tests upon landing, as well as canceling the quarantine requirement for unvaccinated Israelis returning from abroad. Additionally, the new plan allows children under the age of 12 accompanied by vaccinated adults into the country, but they will still be required to quarantine until receiving a negative COVID test result. The green pass certificate showing vaccination and boosting status will no longer be required at events, but the indoor mask mandate will remain in place. Bennett and the health ministry still have not reached an agreement regarding allowing unvaccinated people over the age of 12 into the country. The health ministry opposes the measure. Bennett has asked the health ministry to review the entry of unvaccinated foreigners into Israel as soon as next week. That would allow families with children who have not been vaccinated yet because of their age to enter. A discussion on revoking the regulation to present a proof of vaccination at events and conferences is also expected soon. Final decision on the matter will be subject to the approval of Israel's medical experts. And finally, from Israel, again, Israel's GDP, the gross domestic product, grew by 8.1% in 2021, surpassing all previous forecasts, marking the highest financial growth rate recorded in Israel in 21 years, according to data published by the Central Bureau of Statistics. All that in spite of it being a coronavirus year. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews round the world. We welcome back our guest, Mati Lazar, with a little of his own music from the Zamir choral group Zemer Noded. It's called Hora Hamtera. We welcome back to Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Matthew Mati Lazar, is an extraordinary force in the Jewish choral music movement, not only in North America, but really around the world. An extraordinary conductor, an interpreter of Jewish music, not only a conductor, but an arranger, composer, and I guess to a performer. When your choral groups perform or do recording engagements, do you sort of feel like a performer then, or a conductor? Like, what's the internal dynamic of that?
Well, I was a child prodigy pianist. I remember the first time I played in public at age 4. I had a fantastic piano teacher, Lillian Stern was her name, and she would have her students give recitals in what was then called the Little Steinway Hall, which was very near Carnegie Hall. And I remember coming out on stage, playing a Clementi sonata, having a telephone book under me.
So you could reach the keys. Yeah.
Right. And I remember walking out and looking at the audience, something I had never seen before, and really had a moment of, I don't know what I'm doing here. And then I said, I guess I'm going to play. And I played. And that's really my earliest experience of performing. So I've often performed as a pianist, either as a soloist or with a band. I had a band called Teku, really the first Hebrew rock band. But conductors are not looking at the audience. Their back is to the audience. So it's a dual combination. It's an experience to be conducting and really facing the players or the singers. And when I accompany the choir, as I often do from the piano, I have the best of both worlds, because I'm looking at the choir, but I get a sense of what the audience is doing at certain times as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a strange thing to be conducting with your back to the audience, hoping to get a good response, but you can't see the response. So it's nice to have that kind of hybrid experience.
You can't see the response, but you can feel the audience. Yeah. You can sense what's going on in the room.
You have worked with a lot of great cantors as well. I have heard from conductors that the single most difficult thing in the world is to conduct cantors. Would you agree with that?
Cantors as a subset of singers. Soloists have a tendency. I remember once conducting very early on. There was a special event and Robert Merrill deigned to sing part of the Bluff Sacred Service. With piano and chorus, Zamir Karel.
Yeah.
And I'm standing there and I look at him. He looks at me. He closes his eyes. And I say, okay, I'm following him.
Who's conducting whom here? That's right.
Well, the job of the conductor is to accompany. And we always have to remember that and get a good balance. And at certain key moments, trying to avoid a conflict of interest. There was a famous event where Leonard Bernstein was conducting with a pianist. And they disagreed on the tempo, and they each stood up and spoke to the audience and said, I take no responsibility for this performance. And then continued.
You know, when I sang the Bloch Sacred Service, I do not remember closing my eyes to the conductor. I can't even, but I'm not Robert Merrill. Jewish music has, you know, it evolves, it changes. Just some kind of larger questions about Jewish music. I think I've always felt that we won't know what the great compositions are from this generation for 20 or 30 years because they'll still be around. You have introduced a lot of new music in addition to reviving a lot of remarkable and wonderful traditional music. How do you choose what you use for the Zamir Chorale?
Well, not only for Zamir Chorale, but for all the ensembles,
sure.
Especially HaZamir, the International Jewish Teen Choir. In fact, one of the subsets of one of the programs of the Zamir Chorale Foundation is something called the Mandel Rosen Fund for New Music, which was created by Phyllis and Richard Rosen, Alehem HaShalom, who decided to donate a substantial amount of money so we could commission new works every year. And I get a chance to choose some text. Sometimes they chose a text, but we have 35 new pieces of music. And it depends very often on what it is that the donor would like to have, a text that reflects something in their family history or something that's important, a text that's important for the singers to really know, especially the young singers. Then the other balance of choice is the classics, that the core curriculum, so to speak, yeah, of what Jewish choral singers should know, just like you hear Beethoven 7th every now and then, because that's a core curriculum piece for the orchestral-loving people. And then very often you hear a great piece of music or you know a composer, and it speaks to you. And of course, the difference between amateur and professional choirs is that with amateur choirs, there's a parameter of the possibility. I think there's a rabbinic dictum that you don't make a halachic decision that the congregation and the community cannot abide by.
Right.
So when you're choosing repertoire for amateur choirs, you're limited by the range of the singers, the strength of the individual sections.
One of my favorite projects you were involved in was Birthday of the World, kind of Rosh Hashanah music that you did, working with an old friend, Abe Mizrahi. You know, you've worked with the very highest level of musician, not only Robert Merrill, but a lot of really spectacular musicians. But when you're working with a younger choir, whether it's a youth choir or an international teen choir, there's a tremendous range difference in terms of sight reading ability, vocal range, intonation, all of the things that you have to work with musically. How do you adjust?
Well, that's the job of the conductor, is to adjust and to kind of steer the ship in the right direction. So what happens usually is that you have to, l'chadchila, from the beginning, make sure that the combination and the relationship between whatever the choice of repertoire is appropriate for the ensemble. If it's inappropriate, a disaster is looming. Well, that's the great thing about working with professionals. There's almost really nothing that they can't do.
Sure.
But then you have the opportunity to shape and really be expressive, which they love and which, you know, I love.
What's your favorite?
Is that a good answer for you?
That's a pretty good answer. What's your favorite group to work with? Or I don't know. I don't want to, you know, bias anybody.
Oh, and see, how many children do you have?
Yeah, only three, but, you know.
Every group has a different special feeling. Every group has a different personality. And I love engaging in the personalities. That's one of the great things about music making. You get heart-to-heart communication, soul-to-soul communication, and you can sometimes even reach the ineffable if you're lucky.
in creating Chorale, I mean, when you began this, you said as assistant director, later, of course, director, and then developed this entire foundation. Was it an organic growth? Was it a vision that you had at the beginning?
It was early on, after I took over the Zamir Chorale, that I realized that it was important to have not just one choir, but to engage other choirs. And that's how the North American Jewish Choral Festival was conceived of. And because I was a teenager when I started singing in the Mossad Choral Group, I knew just how great it was for teenagers who were willing to express themselves through the joy of choral singing, which of course combines community, the text, which means the culture of our people, and music, which is always the hook. And it was a natural understanding that it couldn't just be the local group. It had to be bigger. It's, you know, like Hillel, Rabbi Hillel said, if I'm not for myself, who will be for me? But yeah. If I'm only for myself, what am I?
Sure. So the concept was to enlarge it from the beginning, or just as soon as you started?
As soon as I understood the power of the ability to expand and overcame the notion, as we said earlier in the program, that no one else was doing this. I was very lucky that the late, great Elie Wiesel was the champion and the...
By the way, a past guest of Two Jewish and an incredible man.
How
just
wonderful.
An amazing
how
guy.
Wonderful. Yeah. What a great loss to the Jewish
to the
people
world.
And to the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was he who, early on in my relationship with him, said, I said, what do you think I should do? He said, well, no one else is doing it, so I guess that means you should do it. And that was a good encouragement. My parents had encouraged me similarly, but when a Nobel laureate or soon-to-be Nobel laureate gives you that advice, you take it to heart.
Are there differences in working with choirs in America and Israel?
There are definitely differences. In America, their Hebrew is not so good, of course, because they have a flat R. Israel, they have a good roll to resh, although if you do a spiritual, they have a trouble saying the word the,
right.
Which is
duh.
Yeah, or something. And we have many Hazamir teen singers that come to America, and this is always a wonderful moment where the Americans are waiting for the Israelis to pronounce those words, and the Israelis are looking at the Americans and saying, how come they can't roll their rations?
What is Yerushalayim? Like, where'd you get that from?
Well, you get it from your Hebrew school or from someone else saying it. But in Israel, there's a greater choral tradition. You know, every kibbutz or every kibbutz movement would have a choir. In America, you really didn't really have that. Usually, the state of Texas has lots of choirs. So there is, in the Christian tradition, a real need to be singing in choirs. But we really didn't have that too much in the Jewish tradition, certainly not in the 60s and the 70s.
So, you know, music is often thought of in an educational setting as extra. It's extracurricular. It's an additional thing. That's true in the Jewish world, too, even though so much of the service is sung. Is one of the goals of the Zamir Choral Foundation and you personally to kind of encourage the understanding that music is central to Jewish expression?
Well, Jewish and music go together since Moses sang Az Yashir Moshe,
right,
at the crossing of the Red Sea. And of course, we have the tremendous legacy of Jewish music in the temple with the Levim, with the Levites. In fact, there's a good connection between the music of the temple and Gregorian chant.
It's funny. The Boston Camerata did a fantastic album about that some years back. Really great.
Right. There were a few books written about that by Eric Werner, The Sacred Bridge. So there's a chant which we have in Hebrew, B'Tzeit Yisrael, when Israel left Egypt, Psalm 114, but in the Liber Yeshualis, which is the Christian Siddur, so to speak, it's Psalm 113 in the Vulgate, and it's almost exactly the same music.
When Jewish music evolved, you know, we think about Nusach as cantors and think it, you know, goes back to Mi-Sinai. We even talk about Mi-Sinai tunes. But the truth is music changes and develops in every generation and every place. How is it changing now?
I think it's changing now, not too much differently than it has always changed. Jewish music has always been, in part, music of the host country. And so the style of the Jewish composers, if there were very often the style of the host country's music. So, for example, Zulzer and Lewandowski, the two great names of synagogue music, were European, and so they imitated Mendelssohn, or in Zulzer's case, knew Schubert personally. And so in the American style, it sounds more American. George Gershwin, for example, or even Shalom Secunda with his Yiddish theater music. So I think it has to do with more than the host country and the musical style of that country. And if you have any luck, you can try to combine the Mi-Sinai tune idea or the Nusach or any of the Jewish liturgical musical modes and combine them as Leonard Bernstein did in the Jeremiah Symphony, which sounds like a Haftorah. In fact, I spent a long time trying to figure out what Haftorah he was quoting before I realized he was just making it up.
You know, creativity is always part of Jewish music. You've composed, and your arrangements are really, some of them, just spectacular. How much time do you have to actually do musical writing or arrangements?
Well, you know what the square root of a negative number is?
Yeah.
It's an imaginary
zero.
Number.
Yeah, it's an imaginary number.
So I don't really have too much time to compose. I kind of gave that up when I was after college. All you have to do is listen to the Bach Triple Concerto and say, well, what am I doing?
Yeah.
And I was a composer when I was younger. I studied with some really first-rate composers like Carol Husa and Hugo Weisgall, who were both award-winning composers. But I became less interested in the blank score page and more interested in interpretation. And that comes also from the Jewish side, where you have a text and you're looking at the various forms of interpretation. And so it is with great music. And rather than try to be a great composer or a third-rate composer, I wanted to be a first-rate interpreter.
You're more than a first-rate interpreter. You're really, I think, a pioneering and extraordinary force in Jewish music. I want to thank Mati Lazar for a great visit here. He will be here in Tucson, Arizona on March 4th for the Kohan Memorial Foundation Awards. Where can people go to find out more about you, Mati, and about the Zemir Choral Foundation?
We have two websites, zemirchoralfoundation.org and hazamir.org, which is a website just about the International Jewish Team Choir. And by the way, those of you who are listening who might be in New York on March 27th, we're doing our first live concert in 3 years because we were about to do our concert in March of 2020, but we all know what happened then.
Yeah.
March 27th at Jazz at Lincoln Center at 3 p.m. And they can always call you and you'll tell them.
Absolutely. Mati, thanks so much. Excited and looking forward to seeing you soon.
So my pleasure to be with you.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out from the work of Mati Lazar.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Joshua M. Green, author of outstanding nonfiction memoirs and children's books on the Holocaust, including the extraordinary Unstoppable and award-winning. He'll be here in Tucson at Congregation Beit Simcha on Friday night, March 4th, to receive the Kohan Memorial Foundation Award. And don't forget that you can join us at Congregation Beit Simcha in person every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat, starting at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning, too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading, and Kiddush, all live in person and available on our Facebook page. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org for more information. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Don't forget our Rodeo Shabbat ride and service as well. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from one of our guests' last big public performances in New York before the pandemic, Mati Lazar conducting Ya Ribon Olam by Rabbi Solomon with the alumni of Hazamir at Lincoln Center. My friends, may you have a healthy and musical week, God willing, a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Ya Ribon Olam ve'almaya antum alka melech malchaya ovad gavu
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.